Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. Thanks again for listening. Well, it looks finally, after four elections in 2 years, we're going to have a new government starting this coming Sunday. Draft coalition agreements have been signed between three major parties, one called Yesh Atid, one called Yamina, and the other called Israel Beiteinu. These draft coalition agreements indicate that reforms to key matters of religion and state will be on the agenda of the government that looks like it's going to be sworn in on Sunday. There will be no religious parties in this coalition. The Yamina's coalition agreement with Yesh Atid mentions reforms to the system for Jewish conversion, the provision of kashrut services, food kosher services, and the method of electing the chief rabbis. Now, the agreement between Yesh Beiteinu and Yesh Atid also mentions reforms to kashrut and conversion, but addresses a far greater range of religious and state issues, including stipulations regarding civil marriage, the Western Wall Prayer Access Agreement, the ultra-Orthodox education system, and commerce and public transportation on Shabbat. But the Yamina Yesh Atid agreement also states explicitly that no reforms will be enacted to the current status quo on religion and state issues unless there's agreement within the coalition of all the parties to make such changes. So it's a big riddle, if you will. It's a puzzle. Hopefully it'll work out. And critically, the coalition agreements between Yamina and Yesh Atid state explicitly that all parties to the coalition will be beholden to that agreement, and if the coalition agreements between Yesh Atid and other parties contradict the Yamina agreement, the Yamina agreement will take precedence. Let's see how little this works out. It's quite complicated. It should be interesting. I'll be back after the break.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few words about passion and politics. Both in the United States and here in Israel. So first, allow me to provide the listeners with a little background. There is a city called Ariel, which is a very large city right in the middle of the area of Israel called Samaria. And the city was founded about 40 years ago, and today it's got tens of thousands of people living there. It's a major city today, but way back in the beginning, 40 years ago, it was really just a few little huts. And the mayor, who was very popular and is there for many years, was a fellow by the name of Ron Nachman. And one year, an election was coming, And I mentioned to Ron that he'll probably win by a very large margin because he was extremely popular. And he said something to me which was a lesson about politics. At the day of the election, it was very bad weather, it was raining. And he said to me, because it's bad weather, he's going to win, he expects to, but he's going to win by a smaller margin. And I said to him, why? What's the weather have to do with it? And he said to me, he taught me something very interesting. He said, people vote according to their emotions. If you like someone and the weather's nice, you come out to vote. If the weather's not nice, you say, well, I assume my candidate's going to win anyhow, so I won't bother to vote. But someone who really dislikes you, and I remember he used the word hate, if somebody really hates you, they'll come out no matter what the weather is. They'll come out in a thunderstorm. They'll come out in a snowstorm because they really hate you. And hate is a more efficient driver of election feelings than love. So that's the background. And let's see what's happening now. Hate is really a big emotion. And when politics is involved, it is a very powerful emotion. So powerful, it's been remarked, that it's almost blinding. Hate can motivate a movement and it can mold a campaign. Hate is a vehicle that drives people to vote much more than like or love, and it drives people to respond. Hate galvanizes. It unites people who would never otherwise be united. There was a recent presidential election in the United States in which Trump was kicked out of office and he was replaced with Biden. The coalition formed as a result of the last election in Israel and at once no part of Benjamin Netanyahu was propelled by hate. In other words, the vote against Trump was propelled by hate, and the vote against Netanyahu here in Israel was propelled by hate. These motivations have nothing to do with values. They have nothing to do with political convention. They have nothing to do with party platforms. It's pure, unadulterated hate. That is the way it is. The famous words of Machiavelli rang throughout the elections. He said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So the question you have to ask yourself is, how long can that emotion, hate, sustain a group of politicians? How long can a group of people who really have nothing in common, because their only shared interest is the hate of someone that they mutually hate? For now, here in Israel, just like there was in the United States, people voted for the opposition simply out of hate. The question is, will these people who elect a new administration, whether it's here or in Israel, whether they have anything in common yet can build a workable coalition? Hate requires a lot of energy. Hate runs on amounts of adrenaline. What it does, among other things, it clouds one's judgment. Hate may sway votes, but it's no way to run a government and lead a country. This is true anywhere, including both Israel and the United States. The danger in using hate as a political vehicle is that hate is not a political platform. It is not a policy. It is not a philosophy. In the U.S. election, the Biden campaign last year took the shape of anyone but Trump, and it was very effective as a campaign. It created a huge groundswell. The polling numbers were clear. Many of the votes cast were not pro-Biden votes. They were simply anti-Trump votes. So in other words, the whole idea that appealed to the haters was come out, vote, and defeat Trump. That is what gave the presidency to Biden. Now, in a similar type of is happening here in Israel, and it's what motivates party leaders. So now we have a possible coalition coming up. Is one of the most mismatched coalitions in the history of the country to ever be formed. But when your mission is to hate, and after you've succeeded in achieving your goal of getting rid of the guy who's in office, in this case here in Israel, it's Netanyahu, what happens next? This is the overwhelming problem confronting the Israeli leadership today. There's a coalition coming into being. The parties that compose the coalition differ in their worldviews. They differ in their views of Israel. They're different in their ideas about the economy, about peace, about settlements, about foreign policy, about health care, about education. And then also here in Israel, you have a large difference, different than the United States, and that is the role of religion in Israeli society. All these differences are on the table. So what happens is the first thing all these people want to do who hate Netanyahu is to get rid of him. And that essentially is the only issue that they agree on. Get rid of Netanyahu. That is what coalesces all these opposition parties. Here in Israel, we know that coalition crises happen all the time. We have had 4 elections in 2 years. The question is, can the group that takes over from Netanyahu and the Likud, can it create a working coalition that would be good for the country? The question is, will this coalition survive, since the only thing it has in common is getting rid of Netanyahu? Once they do that, what happens next? In theory, organizational theory, there's a notion that opposing groups and ideas can work together. The principle is that a chaotic system can find an equilibrium and then find stability. The problem is that this can only happen if the opposing groups define and then focus on exactly what it is they want to achieve. And then they need to agree that these issues are the mutual goals. If they focus on commonality and on achieving these shared goals, equilibrium and stability can be achieved. But they must deliberately avoid the elements that will divide them. The most important issues to address in Israel today are the post-pandemic economy, national security, especially cybersecurity, and safety and defense. In other words, internal infrastructure development and defense of our borders. So if these parties, this coalition, can avoid issues in which they really disagree, then they have a fighting chance of surviving. The truth of the matter is that's a very big if. We don't know if it's going to happen. This is the first time that a bunch of parties that really have nothing in common, are getting together with one goal, to kick out Benjamin Netanyahu to replace the prime minister. The question is, do they have enough in common to form a stable government? Israel is a country always in crisis. We have crisis on our borders in particular. And it's really a very touchy period of time. So let us hope that the government, which is going to be formed this week, will have leadership in each party that has enough sense to know that the common interests are really more important than all their several little interests, and they can be worked out. The first goal they've had is to get rid of Netanyahu. The next role is to form a stable government that's good for the country. We hope, we really hope and pray that this will happen, because the first time we've had this kind of situation and here in Israel. We've had some governments that have been questionable, but this one is really one with big questions about it. I'll be back after the break.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Shalom, I'm Leah Aharoni. Join me on my show, News from the Torah. Each Sunday, we'll use the weekly Torah portion as a prism for understanding the news today. Listen to News from the Torah to gain clarity about the times we're living in and to understand your own spiritual path in the process. News from the Torah, every Sunday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. In the previous segment of the program, I spoke about the fact we have an election. And it's motivated primarily by hate, but we have a coalition now being formed. I want to say a few words about the possibilities of that coalition. Now, there's no doubt that Prime Minister Netanyahu has a really enviable record of accomplishment, particularly in foreign relations, in security and economics. And certainly he deserves credit and thanks for all of that. Notwithstanding the fact that he has some current legal challenges. However, having served for 15 years, and keep in mind that Israel does not have term limits for its nationally elected officials, 15 years is more than any other prime minister. So it's clear to a large portion of the population that it's time for new leadership to take over in order to the risk of Israel becoming a totalitarian state. There's a famous statement, Lord Acton said, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So despite that our Prime Minister Netanyahu has, I believe, done a good job, there's a limit to how long he can stay. So now what's happening now that two parties are getting together to form a coalition. One of the parties is headed by a fellow named Naftali Bennett, and he's head of the Yamina Party. He will probably become prime minister in rotation with a fellow named Lapid. But there's a very interesting concept here. There are 120 seats in the Knesset, and the Yamina Party, of which Naftali is the head, gathered only 6 seats in the Knesset in the recent election. So people can ask themselves, can a party that only holds 6 seats in a Knesset of 120 seats, and where a working majority needs 61 seats, can a party with 6 seats really be given the chance to rule? The whole concept of a parliamentary democracy is that whoever is able to put a coalition together gets to work with his or her coalition partners to determine who will lead the coalition and become prime minister. And so if the coalition partners agreed that Bennett, who only has 6 seats out of 120, should be the next prime minister, that's the way it should be. That's the way the system works, and that's the way we have to recognize it. Now, there's a lot of noise that many of Bennett's supporters would not have voted for him if they suspected he would agree to a coalition with the Arabs. Bennett is in the process now of signing a coalition with a bunch of parties, including the Arab Party. And that's the first time that an Arab party is going to go into Knesset as part of a coalition. So some say this is being abandoned of his constituency, and it might be considered a pure power grab by Bennett. However, keep in mind that Bennett, and I don't know him personally, I know his parents, his mother, and he's been a very successful businessman. His brother and he together are self-made millionaires, and they were in the high-tech industry during its infancy, and they became very wealthy. And he actually, I believe, went into politics because he thought he could do good. So maybe these are the people who should be deciding what is strategically best for Israel. And keep in mind that the Israeli Arabs constitute a little more than 20% of the population. So the truth of the matter is that logic would dictate that they should be part of the governing coalition. So that indeed is a problem. This is a Jewish country and would like the decisions to be made by a healthy Jewish majority. But these are not normal times. Israel cannot afford a fifth election within 3 years. So there's always the possibility in the situation when we're in, there's a likelihood of more military conflict, particularly with Iran or its proxies. And there's been an Arab insurrection in Jerusalem and in the city of Lod. So the truth of the matter is, I believe that these problems can best be tackled by a broad government, particularly the right wing. And the truth of the matter is, there are those who believe that it'd be nice to have an Arab party in a coalition for a while. At the same time, there have been coalitions for many years with the so-called ultra-Orthodox, and this time around, it turns out they're not going to be in the coalition. We're going to have Arabs in and the ultra-Orthodox parties out. So maybe it'll be good for them to be out of the coalition for a while. Maybe they'll become more mature. The truth of the matter is that a fortune has been spent on 4 elections in 2 years. And avoiding another election, I really is seeing something important. So these parties are going to have to compromise. And maybe they can't compromise in every area, but at least the government should lower the flames. Indeed, bringing about a climate of relative calm is the greatest contribution this new government could make. So It's has all kind of people who basically don't agree with each other on a lot of issues. But national unity, even if it's temporary and even if it's fragile, along with a change of leadership after 15 years, may be necessary and worthwhile for the Israeli electorate. Maybe a spirit of bipartisanship and solidarity will emerge. Maybe these two leaders of these two parties, one is Naftali Bennett and the other is Yair Lapid, maybe they'll demonstrate leadership, especially when they're going to have to make a lot of tough things like budget cuts and new taxes that are undoubtedly coming. So the Israelis expect these two politicians to rise above politics, it may be it's wishful thinking, but the question right now is whether this intended government will be voted in by the Knesset. There's no doubt that Netanyahu is certain to do everything he can to peel away one or two members of Knesset over the coming weeks and keeping him in office as a caretaker prime minister for the rest of the year and making another election in the fall necessary. I truly hope any thinking Israeli has to hope that this will not happen. But today, it's not too much to hope for a government that'll be neither radical left nor radical right, neither anti-religious or obnoxiously religious coercive. It should be neither feeble nor fierce. The only time Israel has to deal harshly and fiercely is when dealing with the country's real enemies who are outside our borders. And toward them, Israel must be totally uncompromising. We can compromise on politics, internal politics. That is not as vital as guaranteeing not to compromise on the defense of the country. As long as we can do that together, we have some success. The government with a small party in the driver's seat is not desirable, but there's no doubt about its constitutional and democratic legitimacy as long as it enjoys the Knesset's confidence. By the way, in a number of countries like Israel are torn apart by extreme political fragmentation and deep-seated political disagreements. Take a look at Belgium, and where the incumbent prime minister represents the Flemish Liberal Party. Even in the last election, it only won 12 seats out of 150 parliament. And Latvia, the prime minister's New Unity Party, has only 8 seats out of 100. So it's actually the smallest in the parliament. So here we're doing the same thing in Israel. And these things seem to work if the politicians are willing to compromise and look for the best of the country. So it's difficult to predict how the Israeli coalition will function. It'll be a minority government with a vast ideological gulf between its member factions, and minority governments, especially one that's based on such a heterogeneous coalition, tend to be less stable than other governments in it. So a small party finds it difficult to steer the government's course. But this is a situation we are getting into, and getting into very rapidly. But a government that is so heterogeneous will also have the potential to restore the principle of voluntary sharing of power and cooperation among parties that represent different electorates. So let's hope it works out. We don't want another election, no matter what. I'll be back after the break.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to touch upon a subject which is under the radar, but it's really important. And it has to do with the relationship between Israel and the evangelical Christians in the United States. Now, for the last 15 years, Netanyahu is the only Israeli premier that most evangelicals know, and he is respected and he is trusted at. And it is believed that Bibi is beloved by the vast majority of evangelical Christians in the United States, and there are 60 million of them, and there are like 600 million evangelicals worldwide. Now, the situation is that the only prime minister the evangelicals know is Bibi Netanyahu. They do not know Naftali Bennett. They don't even know his name. Nor do they know Lapid, who's the incoming foreign minister. And could be, and I'm sure, that most of them never even heard of these two politicians. So there's no trust yet because they simply don't know them. Now, trust can be developed because the bottom line is that the evangelicals love and support Israel unconditionally. And they want the best for the Jewish state regardless of who leads the country. But to get trust in the new leadership will take time and effort. It's interesting. It would be useful for the leaders of Israel's new government to realize why it is that the evangelicals have come to love Netanyahu so much. Now, when did he first come on the American scene, Netanyahu? He was Israel's deputy ambassador to the United States during the Gulf War back in 1991. And he appeared frequently on CNN and other TV programs. And a lot of people were drawn to him. He's a good speaker, and he presents the arguments well. So these people, these evangelicals, see him, Netanyahu, as a champion of Israel's security, peace, and prosperity. And that's what they want in an Israeli leader. They admire Netanyahu because of his stand against the terrorists in Iran, who they believe to be an existential threat to the state of Israel, and they see him as standing up against the radical Islamic terrorist movements around the region. That goes Hamas, Hezbollah, Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic State, and Iran. So evangelicals support Netanyahu, and they loved him when he addressed a joint session of Congress, and he spoke against the former President Barack Obama's dangerously flawed nuclear deal with Iran. They applauded Bibi when he consistently confronted Palestinian Authority President Abbas's corruption, his complicity with the terrorists, and his congenital resistance even to direct peace talks with Israel. So for decades, the evangelicals have stood enthusiastically with Netanyahu in the effort to move the American embassy to Jerusalem and to persuade the U.S. to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. And they were grateful when these efforts bore fruit. And by the way, there is an office in Karnei Shomron, this little city in Samaria where I used to live. There's an office there of an evangelical group, and they do provide tremendous support for Israel. They have projects going in a lot of these settlements for gardens, for kindergartens, for schools. It's all supported by the evangelicals, and they have, as I said, an office in Karnei Shomron. It's not far from where I used to live, and I'm very friendly. I know the person who runs that office. So, obviously, the evangelicals were happy when Israel signed peace agreements with four Arab governments: the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, and Mexico. As a matter of fact, the evangelicals believe that Netanyahu deserves a peace prize for in the historic, what's called the Abraham Accords with these four Muslim countries. Now, another thing is that senior evangelical leaders, and including ministers and clergy, came to know Netanyahu personally. He speaks English very well. He's very charming. He knows what to say. And they've met with him. They've interacted with him. They've asked him questions about just about every topic dealing with Israel. They had him speak at their conferences, their events, even in their churches. More than any other leader in the history of Israel, Netanyahu actively courted and cultivated relationships with evangelical leaders for at least 30 years. Why did he do so? Because I think he believed evangelicals who are deeply immersed in the teaching of the Bible are Israel's most important, faithful, loyal, and strategic allies in the world. And by the way, when I said that, I include the fact that I believe that they're more faithful allies to Israel than many, many Jews in the United States. The evangelicals have responded enthusiastically to Netanyahu's request to help him bolster political support and congressional funding for Israel in the United States. They've helped him fight anti-Semitism around the world. And they defend Israel in the mainstream media and on social media. So they, by the way, another thing they've done is they've responded generously to his request that they bring more Christian tourists to Israel. And I myself, when I lived in Karnei Shomron, had very, very had often occasion to host these Christian, not just leaders, but laymen. I've hosted them in my home. They give charitable donations to care for the poor and the needy in Israel, and they really are really supportive of Israel. So today, Israelis see Israel losing not just another prime minister, but they're losing the guy that they know, who they know is a powerful and effective global statement. If and when Netanyahu disappears from the leadership of the country, he'll be replaced by two people who were total blanks in the eyes of the evangelicals. It's interesting, Netanyahu, some have called him a global brand who wields far more international influence in a country of fewer than 10 million peoples. He has learned to play on the world stage, and he plays with the political giants. Netanyahu can pick up the phone and call Joe Biden or Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin or Mohammed bin Salman or Boris Johnson or Angela Merkel and talk to them. He can jump on a jet and meet with any of these powerful players at a moment's notice. Very few people in the world can do that. He knows them. He's met with them. They know him. And they know him really intimately. So the evangelicals have little exposure or context for the messy political infighting in Jerusalem today. They say that there are allegations of Netanyahu's being corrupt, or many of longtime allies are frustrated, and they simply don't know the new leadership in Israel. That's the way it is. Most are not aware that the leaders of almost all the center-right parties in Israel are former Netanyahu chiefs of staff. They've been his top advisors. They've been cabinet ministers. So what's happened is there's been a break with Netanyahu and all the people who were really close to him at one time. So this is the situation. The evangelicals will probably be surprised to learn that Naftali Bennett was in many ways Netanyahu's protege. Bennett served in the same Army Special Forces unit as Netanyahu. Bennett served in Netanyahu's chief of staff and was once one of his closest political allies. Bennett served in Netanyahu's cabinet in various positions, including defense minister and education minister. And the truth of the matter is, if Bennett wanted to join a Netanyahu light red government, but he was unable to cobble together such a coalition. So Bennett is really Netanyahu's man. That's his history. By the way, Yair Lapid, the number two man in the new coalition, used to work very closely with Netanyahu, and he served in Netanyahu's cabinet as finance minister. And politically, he's a centrist, not a radical left-winger. So the new government is going to have people that the evangelicals will get to know, and I think they'll love him as much as they love Bibi. Hopefully so. But I just wanted to give this background to what's happening. It's the change in government here in Israel is coming as a shock to a lot of people. But the people who are taking over the government, I think, are clever enough to know how to handle the after waves of the shock. Thanks again for listening. Jay Shapiro signing off. God willing, until next week.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.